Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring. Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation. For folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful, you can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's M-A-U-I-N-U-I. venison.com and use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order.
From Meat Eaters World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is Cal's Week in Review with Ryan Cal Callahan. Now, here's Cal.
Another special edition, a special drop of Cal's Week in Review. This week, we're speaking with PLWA, the Public Land Waters Access Association. There's always two A's, but it's PLWA, right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yep. And speaking of sirs, our guests are Haley Sir and Alex Leone or Leone.
Leone. Good job. Yeah.
All right. All right. And what do you do, Alex?
So I'm the brand new executive director of PLWA, and I've been on the job for about 3 weeks, but I've been a fan and supporter of the organization for over a decade.
And Haley, what are you up to?
I am the director of access investigations. So I'm the person you talk to when you write into PLWA, call or email us with an access issue. I'm the one that kind of does the deep digging, figures out how we can address it, if it really is a public access issue, and how we can work towards a resolution.
And that's exactly what we need to get into. We always hear from our listeners that they want to know what groups to get involved with and who does what. And that's why we're exploring PLWA, which is a group that I have known and loved, cherished really for a really long time. I would say, and excuse me for saying this, pretty unknown. Started pretty small. I think when Jordan and I were talking long ago on this topic, my description of PLWA was it was a bunch of retired lawyers that got frustrated finding no trespassing signs on public access spots where they wanted to fish. And that's how PLWA got started. But please, you two are the experts. Let me know if how wrong I am. But it is an access organization. So what is PLWA and what does it do?
Haley, do you want me to jump in first or do you want to?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
So PLWA, I guess maybe started with a group of rabble rousers, but it wasn't just lawyers. It was also some of Montana's conservation giants. If you look at the history of some of the folks that kind of helped found the PLWA or found PLWA, you got to just go to Montana's Outdoor Hall of Fame and you'll see a lot of those names emboldened on that list. So we have been around since the mid-1980s and since 1985, actually. And for a long time, we were just a small all-volunteer group. But recently, we've really upped our game and we've expanded our programming just because there's just so many access issues that have really multiplied in the state of Montana. But back to the history, PLWA has been around since 1985. The stream access law and the kind of underpinnings of that are really what got the organization some feet and some notoriety at the onset. For folks that are aware, Montana's got the most amazing stream access law in the country. And the fact that we're able to recreate on all public waters above the high water mark is a pretty amazing thing. And honestly, most folks aren't even aware of this, but you have to thank PLWA for that and the folks that came before us. That's pretty cool. The mission of the PLWA is to maintain and perpetuate access to all of Montana's public lands and waters. So recently, the organization's really shifted a lot from more classic stream access battles to over the last decade or so, really focusing on issues with roads and public lands. And I'll let Haley get into that. That's the primary reason Haley was hired, is just there's just this massive expansion of issues there. But just last quick, like big picture summary, the organization is pretty small now. There's three staff. We got an amazing board of, we have 9 board members, staff of 3. And we work on a big variety of issues, from these things that Haley's going to describe, which I call like our bread and butter access issues, where we have hunters and fishers call in from all over the state telling us about actual problems on the ground, to like some of the bigger policy issues, like the crazies, which we'll talk about later, and this UPOM suit with elk. We're a party to that as well. So we kind of do a mix of everything. And then, but Haley, I'll let you talk more about kind of the bread and butter stuff if you want to.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great summary. Really, the bread and butter of PLWA is addressing access issues that come into our organization. So in case folks don't know, if you're here in Montana, you can actually go on our website right now and report any access issues that you encounter. That could be everything from illegal signage, a gate that popped up on what you believe to be a county or public road, high watermark issues. We've had a lot of those coming in more recently, really anything under the sun in the public access realm. And so if you write it in to us, to me specifically, I'll be contacting you for more information, and then we can get the ball rolling to try to get those things addressed. So we work with the counties, we work with our federal and state agencies, just trying to get these things resolved as quickly as possible. We have a lot of access issues open right now that we are working on. I looked this morning, we actually have 43 open access issues in just the state of Montana right now. So a lot of work to be done, but it's a great gig.
It is. It's an important gig. And I would say the way some of this stuff gets covered, the importance isn't as known to the general public. So for folks who aren't in the know, one of these public access to public water issues, battles that PLWA was instrumental in fighting and bringing to the public's attention most recently was Sailor, right?
Sailor Lane, yeah.
Sailor Lane down in the Ruby Valley. And that's our stream access law. Allows the public to enter public water at public county roads where they cross that water. In this instance, a new landowner had erected fences and signage claiming that was a trespass, and trespassers would be prosecuted. And then that particular landowner was willing to try to fight this trespass issue all the way to the tippy top, the state Supreme Court, and had that individual won, every other person on the planet would have lost access to public water. So something that Montana's known for, a big chunk of our economy is based on, and in my opinion, just, you know, good old American freedom. So that's a really, really big one. But could you tell us about, I know like here in Gallatin County, we just talked about easements recently with land trusts here. There's a lot of easements being fought currently, public access easements being fought currently that PLWA is involved in.
Yeah, and I think, like, let me give you an example of something that, like, just comes in on a daily basis, because I feel like it helps, like, we just recently, and we get these very often, I'm noticing, I've only been on the job 3 weeks, but we've already received a couple of these calls. One of the things we really deal with frequently that involves easements, almost everything we deal with, Ryan, involves easements, honestly. Like almost all the things we're talking about, whether it's stream access or a road or the crazies, has an easement involved. And so we recently had a call from an awesome supporter near Miles City who had been using a county road for elk hunting for a long time, and a new outfitter had come in to the area and it convinced some landowners to start checking people as they came by to access public land. So what I loved is that individual calls up us right away. It's kind of like Ghostbusters, like, who are you going to call? And it's going to be PLWA. And Haley, who has dealt with this so many times, I was so excited, Ryan, because I'm new. I'm just like, oh, yeah, let's drive over there. Let's whatever. But, you know, this happens so frequently, which is unfortunate, that PLWA has kind of a guidebook on how we go through it. Haley wrote a really well worded letter to the county to kind of let them know we're going to be watching them. And we really expect that they'd follow the, you know, the law of the land. We had a lawyer review it, and that's kind of the process. But there's no other group that I know of in the state that is responding to those things on an individual basis, which I think makes us really unique. So hopefully that helps a little bit.
Could you expand on that just a little bit? So why does it matter that landowners are checking people driving on a county road?
Haley, you want to explain that a little bit better? You're so good at explaining the intricacies. I'm just a 20,000 foot person.
Sure. Yeah. And I think, Cal, you kind of mentioned, you know, these like the Sailor Lane issue. This is a precedent setting issue. So each access issue that we look at, it could set precedent for something else down the road. So we've seen many county roads in many different counties pop up with a gate or have some sort of encroachment, all which is against state law. So if we don't address this quickly, and the county doesn't get involved or the sheriff or whoever needs to be there quickly, that can remain gated or blocked, or there could be issues of harassment on that, you know, in perpetuity until the county's willing to deal with it. So applying a little bit of pressure, making sure that everybody's aware of the state laws. A lot of what I do and we do as an organization is educate folks on our county laws and our state laws and our public access laws. So that's a huge chunk of my work as well. So it's just really important that we get these issues in as quick as possible and we address them as quick as possible in accordance with state law so that these issues don't proliferate across the state.
And is it, I guess, how prolific is the action of shutting down a county road?
I mean, it's in direct violation of state law. So, I mean, if you're looking at access to a public land parcel, in this particular case, it was specifically during hunting season. So you have a lot of hunters and folks that are trying to go out and visit their public lands that are now having issues of harassment, having to meet with the sheriff, you know, being blocked from their public lands and their ability to recreate and, hunt on their public lands. So.
And one of the reasons, Ryan, that we had to, the Haley was hired, and she knows this better than me because I wasn't even there yet. I was just reading the newsletters at the time, was because of an uptick in issues. And you know that, your podcast listeners know that as well. Like, as the changing land demographics in the West continue to kind of, that continues to uptick, and we have changing ownership and folks that are more interested in monetizing elk instead of, like, you know, raising hay, it's just really changed, I think, a lot of dynamics. Also, elk have moved, especially in Montana, into eastern parts of the states where you and I were a kid, they weren't even there. So that's just changed dynamics in a lot of these areas too, I think. And Haley, tell me if I'm wrong there too, but I think that's a lot of what we've dealt with recently has been things that have been related to just changing land ownership.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lack of knowledge about our public access laws. So I think a lot of folks come in and they buy their little piece of paradise and they don't want to see the recreating public at the end, parked at the end of their driveway. Even if that isn't a public right of way, we are seeing an increase in that. So definitely a lot more access complaints over the last few years.
How much of this can we just blame on the real estate agents?
That's a great question. I'm sure eventually that'll come back around, but right now, not the focus.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who are real estate agents, so that's not a barb out there. It's an inside joke that I probably should quit telling, but that is something that always comes up when people decide to take action in blocking access, they like to be able to default back and say, oh, well, I just didn't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's one of the problems, and that's why our organization is so important, though, is the burden is kind of on the public, which is one of the problems, right? Like, the burden is on us to prove to the county that it's a public road. I mean, if you're a county commissioner and you're not an expert in roads and you have some landowner who's like a long-term constituent who's coming to you and telling you this is their road, I mean, again, it kind of, it puts people in an interesting spot. So I think that's why the PLWA is so important, is that someone has to be, you know, the in-between and do the vetting for sure.
Absolutely. And it is so difficult as just a recreating member of the public to go out and stop what you're doing, stop your hunting season and go, oh, I had this confrontation, instead of just going the hard way around and continuing on and trying to enjoy my hunting season. I need to stop and address this issue because it's only going to get worse. It's a tough thing where the aggressor really does have the upper hand.
Absolutely.
Because we just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing that more and more, especially issues, anglers as well, in the high water mark. We're seeing an uptick in those sorts of complaints. And we're finding that it really has fallen on the public. The burden is on the public to prove that they are in the right and accessing that waterway via the high water mark and a public right of way or a bridge abutment. It really is falling on them to prove that they're in the right.
And honestly, think about too, that's an interesting point, right? Because think about how many of our members and board members came on because of an access issue. Like, several of our board members are still dealing with ongoing access issues that kind of brought them into our organization. So I think it is becoming a lot more ubiquitous. And maybe that's also why Haley has been working on this amazing reporting application that we have, that at some point we should talk about too, because that's going to change the game for us a little bit as well. We're going to make it easier to report access complaints in Montana, essentially.
So. What would be a 1-2-3 step of what any member of the public should do if they find themselves in a contested situation on a road or a trail or a parking spot?
My first advice would be to contact the authority that would oversee that. So whether that's a federal agency or FWP law enforcement, or game warden, you know, any whoever would be in charge of that, if it's a county road, your county commissioners or your county sheriff. So contact those folks, see what they have to say about it. And then, of course, reach out to PLWA. So right now on our website, if you go on, we have an access issue reporting system, and it has a form right on there where you can report to us the date and time, the location you're at, anybody you spoke with about the issue and what their feedback was. Eventually, we're actually working on putting that into an app, so folks will be able to do that directly in the field as they're encountering an access issue, which will be it will help us to really streamline the process of getting these access issues in and start working towards a resolution. But yeah, if you're out in the field and you run into this, make sure, you know, you have your location. That's awesome. If you can pull up some coordinates, that's always super helpful, especially for when it comes to reporting time. And then, yeah, pictures are great. Take pictures of everything around you, any signage, any gates. And then just take note of any conversations or confrontations you have. It's best if you are in a confrontation, I would try to remove yourself from that situation as quickly as possible, and then contact whatever authority can you think could be most helpful in that area.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly, and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time. Seafoam motor treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who has used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. I guarantee you've listened to them because I use it, you know, regularly. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more. So we have county roads that come into contention. Seasonally, some of these roads certainly look like they've been abandoned. We have these old county road bridges that have, you know, barbed wire fence up to the very top of them that don't look like a very welcoming place to access a river corridor. And those ones are things that I think we'll be dealing with for a long time, and they're going to keep coming up. But what about this big multi-use crazy mountain issue that's, I hesitate to say it's going on right now because it's been going on for a really long time. Can you guys tell us a little bit more about that? Because I know that the clock's ticking on getting the public voice in on access once again on the crazy mountains.
And maybe I can start like we did before, Haley, with the big picture, and then you can dive in. Does that work?
Sure.
Okay. So great point, Ryan. Do you want me to, I'll just give you like, try to give a super basic overview. So PLWA, as well as a ton of other groups, including BHA, Montana Wildlife Federation, Park County Environmental Council, and others, have really been tracking this for a long time. And what you're referring to, obviously, is this East Crazy Inspiration Divide land exchange that's occurring. So the Crazy Mountains is, for those that are aware, the whole mountain range has a lot of issues with this thing that we call checkerboarding. And I'm sure most of your listeners know what that is, but let me just explain it because I was at dinner last night and no one knew what I was talking about. And checkerboarding just refers to the fact that when the West especially was surveyed by the U.S. government, they split things up into squares, and most of those squares were in square miles. And as they kind of distributed land amongst the public and different entities, especially in the Crazy Mountains, the railroad was granted a lot of different sections all the way into the Crazy Mountains. So what you see is the land ownership pattern of the Crazy Mountains is little boxes, square boxes of green representing Forest Service and square boxes of white representing private land. And that has been an issue in the Crazy Mountains since that occurred, really, for land management for the Forest Service and for some of the private inholdings as well. Very recently, not that recently, but over the last 10 years, there have been multiple, actually 20 years, but there's been multiple attempts to kind of consolidate some of that checkerboard property. And currently, the Forest Service is working to consolidate a ton on the east side of the Crazies. And PLWA has been really opposed to this proposal since it became a little bit more public more recently. So the Forest Service started this process a long time ago. They held working group meetings, which PLWA was not a part of, but other groups were. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, they released an EA, an environmental assessment, with an actual proposal to do a land exchange. And one of the things that's really interesting about this land exchange is that it involves the Yellowstone Club, which is a very large entity, economic engine in Big Sky, and they have a lot of money. And one of the things they're trying to do is they went to the Forest Service and said, hey, we'd like to expand some of our ski operations. What do you need? And this was like 2015. And the Forest Service went back to the Yellowstone Club and said, hey, we'd really love some help with some of this checkerboard on the east side of the Crazies. So the Yellowstone Club hired a consulting firm, and they've been working with the Forest Service and private landholders to negotiate a land exchange that involves land near Big Sky and land in the Crazies, which is over 100 miles away as the crow flies. So same forest, but they're really far apart. So that land, that environmental assessment came out. PLWA and a ton of other groups opposed a lot of the intricacies of that deal and what was kind of said in that assessment. They held an objectioners meeting recently. Haley and the former executive director were there with a ton of other groups, and kind of there was a lot of concerns that were voiced to the U.S. Forest Service. They're kind of moving ahead right now with the whole bureaucratic process of getting this thing approved. And right now it is before Congress, and the Congressional Appropriations Committee has to vote yay or nay on approving this deal. So that's kind of why it's April 3rd is the deadline. We're kind of getting down to the wire and we're trying to get folks to comment on it. So it's really complex, and I don't know if that was a good enough job at simplifying it, but I was trying to do it pretty quickly. Haley, I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but do you have anything else to kind of fill in on big picture stuff?
I would just add that, you know, I do think we acknowledge there are some benefits to consolidating these lands. It's just the way that it's been done. There's been so much opposition to this from us, from other organizations, from our members, from other folks that aren't affiliated with any of these organizations. There's just an overwhelming amount of opposition that has fell on deaf ears. So it's our last chance to get the word out and let the public's voice be heard. And so, yeah, any way that folks can get involved, whether it's with us or other organizations that they're a part of, would be a tremendous help.
Well, I want to get into how to get involved for sure. But can we talk more about, from the access perspective, what's the benefit here and what's the big negative? And, you know, from Montana kid, anything that says Yellowstone Club, I don't want to be in association with or in favor of. But if you could take that away and just say, here's the benefit and here's the negative of this situation. What are they?
Well, that's a very complicated question, as you know, but let me start, Haley, and then you can please correct me because Haley's been doing this so much longer. Ryan, you're right. There are some benefits and we recognize that. I used to work for the Forest Service. A lot of our board used to work for the Forest Service. Those inholdings are really tough to manage. We understand that. There's been longstanding problems. I guess the biggest issue we have is that the negotiated agreement really does limit some public easements and public access abilities that you just were never going to get back. So I don't know if you've been up Sweetgrass Creek, that drainage is amazing. And one of the big problems that our organization has had with this is that the Forest Service is just giving up trails and easements in that drainage. And the public access into that drainage is going to be severely restricted. It's going to require a, 22-mile hike to get in there, Haley, after this, if this land exchange goes through. And that's something we're really concerned about. And I think it's, you know, the way that these negotiations occur, it's the entities, it's the Forest Service, the Yellowstone Club, and the private landowners all negotiating a land exchange. For very good reasons, the public is not part of that process, but that also creates an issue, right? Because they come up with this agreement privately, and then they give it to us as kind of, this is the way it is. And I think that's one of the problems with this, is that the public's, yes, the valuation on the land comes out equally and it checks the boxes for the federal government. But when it comes to access to Montana's lands and waters, we're losing out on quality for sure if this goes through. So, Haley, anything else to add?
I would just add that the benefit as I see it is that decades worth of contentious arguments are going to disappear over those checkerboard parcels. So especially up the Sweetgrass drainage, we don't have access right now. We haven't had it in many, many years because it's been a what we would consider a prescriptive use. So folks, there's just a historical use up there. And historically, the Forest Service has said that they would fight for those prescriptive use easements. It doesn't become an easement unless we take it to court and prove it. But however, the Forest Service has kind of changed their tune on that. A gate went up at the end of Sweetgrass. The Forest Service started signing in And that started the 5-year mark, according to our state laws, saying that we have 5 years to prove prescriptive access or that access goes away. So I think our biggest concern, again, is there are documented easements. There's public trail miles there in Sweetgrass drainage, and all of that will disappear if this deal goes forward.
And I guess, is there a balance? Are we going to gain more access in other areas? Where's the swap part come in?
So the overall, the Forest Service's website is great. If you type in the Inspiration Divide Land Exchange, it pops up right away and it'll explain to you kind of what the parcels are. But I mean, and this, a lot of the other groups have commented on this too, and I think we agree as well. It's like, what's being traded is the actual acreage is going to increase for the public land acreage as part of this deal. But the quality of the land that we're receiving as part of the deal and that we're giving away is just inequitable, right? So the public parcels that are being given away, some of them are in the bottomlands. Some of those are prime elk hunting habitat. We're talking about the bottom of Sweetgrass Creek, which if you look up on Google Maps, it's like this amazing drainage. It's very wild. It's very flashy. It's got amazing cutthroat population. So I think like there may be a net benefit to public land acreage, but it's a lot of rock. And we're giving up a lot of really prime riparian habitat and prime elk habitat down lower. And if you look at the Forest Service website, you can see the parcels that are being exchanged. You can see the lower parcels that are being given up. And then also, Joseph Bullington wrote an amazing article, and he had someone do these maps that just kind of show what's happening, do a really good job illustrating what's going on and what the public's losing as a result of this deal.
And proponent-wise, you said, you know, there's seems to be a large coalition now opposing this land swap. Who's on the proponent side of the land swap?
The Forest Service is very, has been pushing this forward, right? They've been, like, you did a great job asking us about that earlier, Ryan, and being the devil's advocate. Like, they have had issues in this mountain range for a century. So they are they're a very big proponent of this. Obviously, the Yellowstone Club's a big proponent, as are the local landowners involved in the deal.
And so obviously if Yellowstone Club's involved, there has got to be some amount of development planned for this area, right?
Not really for the crazies. The planned development is for the Inspiration Divide area, not the Inspiration Divide area, but the parcel that they're going to receive close to their operations where they're going to be expanding some of their ski operations. So that'd be up by Big Sky.
And I think another point to add is in this agreement, there are mention of conservation easements on these parcels that are being swapped, but there's no really stipulations laid out or requirements per se. And we saw this on the west side of the Crazies when they consolidated land over there as well. You know, it was part of the initial agreement and proposal. However, when we went back and tried to look to see if those conservation easements ever came to be, we didn't find any. So as far as development, you know, there's an argument saying that, well, no, there will be some conservation easements involved. I don't know who will be enforcing that once this land exchange happens.
And are they going to be conservation easements that provide access to the public too is a question mark.
Right.
And yeah, exactly. Like when can we expect them?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And conservation easements are not made equally, as we all know too. Right. And that was the other thing is that there was very soft requirements around it. And that's such an interesting point too, right? Because like when we receive something, right? When the public receives acreage, we're never going to develop it, right? So that's like a monetary value the public is never going to be able to see. But as part of this land exchange, those folks that are receiving some of the bottom land of Sweetgrass Creek do have the potential, and they already have an operation there. They could develop some of that unless there's appropriate conservation easements in place. So that's another inequitable part of this whole, I think, deal is that there's the ability for those folks that are getting public property to change the future of that, the way that land has been managed.
So is it fair to say that there's still a willingness to make a deal? It's just not this deal?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah.
I think we've always stood by the fact that if we could work with the Forest Service to address the issue of access and Sweetgrass drainage, which unfortunately, maybe the timelines run out on that, then we would, you know, be happy to get on board with them. I can't speak for other organizations, but I do agree that there are benefits to consolidating some of this land. It's just that the public's voice isn't being heard on it. And unfortunately, none of the suggestions that have been made in our opposition meetings have been taken into consideration. So there really just hasn't been any change from beginning to end of this process.
Got it. So at this point in time, if folks listening to this wanted to weigh in with their opinion or learn more and then weigh in with their opinion, where would they go and how would they go about doing that?
So I would recommend you check out our website. If you go to PLWA's website, we have a link right on the main page to our East Crazies information page, which we're going to be updating, adding some better images to and a little bit better information on there. But we have a wealth, if you want to nerd out, we have a wealth of information on there if you really want to dig in deep, which is what we do typically. BHA has an amazing page on this as well. They've been kind of partner with us throughout this whole process. They have a lot of awesome information on their webpage as well. But if you really want to get involved, we have until April 3rd to try to let folks that are on the Congressional Appropriations Committees know that we are concerned about this and that we're concerned about the equitability of this exchange. So on our website, you have contacts to at least Montana's delegation. But if you're in another state, contact your senator, your representative, if they're on the Appropriations Committee, and let them know this just isn't cool, because this is Forest Service property. It's not just Montanans that are losing out here. It's all the recreating public. So.
Yeah, and for you folks that aren't quite sure where this is, if you're one of those people that's driven all I-90 like I have, when you're heading east out of Los Angeles, you finally make it over the hill, you get out in the flat past Livingston, and you look off to your north side, your left-hand side, and you go, holy shit, awesome snow fields up on top. It's probably like an 80-degree day, and it's gorgeous and green in the valley. And that island mountain range is called the Crazy Mountains, and it's epic. It's unbelievably beautiful. And the ability to access that thing is kind of brutal as well. So access is getting more and more limited to a really amazing place. But you can look it up on the Google machine and check it out. It's really phenomenal. Has a possibly non-native mountain goat herd that they brought in with pack mules, lots of elk, lots of deer, lots of good fishing, lots of skiing. It's a pretty unbelievable place on the public land roadmap that we can't afford to lose out on. So, Jordan, how are you feeling?
Good. Yeah, that was great, guys. I appreciate it. One thing I did want to ask, when someone writes in and says they have an access issue, you don't charge them to settle that, correct?
No, absolutely not. We use our resources to do the research. That's a main part of my job and why this role was developed, is to have somebody to go do the work and do the research in the man hours to figure out all the details and intricacies of an access issue. We don't charge folks. I will point out, we are there if issues need to go to litigation, but, and maybe Alex can correct me on this, it's far less than 10% of our cases end up down that road. But we are there for that purpose as well.
And that's what's, I think, is amazing too. We're all the memberships, like all our memberships and our donations pay if it goes to court. So we don't ever charge someone to represent them. Like, if someone calls in, we investigate it, obviously, especially if there's merit behind it. And that's one of the awesome things about the organization, is it's like it's the folks you call when you don't know what to do about an access issue. So,
yeah. So I encourage you, if you live in Montana, become a member.
Please. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. Become a member. It's literally the reason why people come to this state is what PLWA is fighting for. So find them on the website, find them on social media, become a member, throw a couple of bucks their way, and weigh in on this crazy mountain access issue. And we'll have more info on the Ask Cal part of the website, I imagine. So
thank you guys very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.